Brenda? Filthy?
Here.
Carol?
Here.
Chris is absent. Warren? Paul?
Yes.
Daly? Here. Samantha?
Here.
And Tom is and Logan also on the no vote to Washington.
Someone else join? Just now?
This is Janet and King Cole. I'm the only one present so far.
Okay. Okay, so we have a quorum. Next item on the agenda is we need a motion and a second for the agenda.
Mayor? Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we adopt the agenda before us with a minor change, moving from the consent agenda, Resolution 1958, honoring the King Cove High School boys and girls basketball teams, move that to the beginning of the number 10 resolutions ahead of the other two. So it would, somebody second. I'll explain it real quick.
I'll second it.
Do we have a second?
Yes, this is Carol.
Okay, thank you, Carol.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and it would just put 1958, 59, and 60 together under resolutions and eliminate it from the consent agenda. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, are there any other corrections or additions to the agenda? Hearing none. Then with, if everyone's okay with that, unless somebody objects, I'll let the agenda stand with the one resolution being moved out of the consent agenda. Thank you. Now would be the time. Does anyone feel they'll have a conflict of interest on any of the items on the agenda? Okay. Community roll call. You want me to do it? I get to do something. King Cole.
I'm the only one present. This is Janet.
Okay, thanks, Janet. Nelson Lagoon?
Justine is here with me.
Okay. Balls pass.
Nikki here.
Okay. Sandpoint, we just have AMO, our maintenance director. Acatan.
There's myself and Mayor Joe Briskin.
Thank you. Kobe.
And Kobe is Daly and Angela.
Thank you. Anchorage.
Ms. Mayor Osterbeck, myself, Annie Bailey, Ernie Weiss, Charlotte Levy, Carol Foster's here as well. Gary Hennig, Amber Yusufovich, Lenora Dushkin, and Laura Tanis.
Thank you. With that, at this time, is there any public comment on any of the agenda items?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Joe.
Thank you. I was at your workshop earlier and listened to, with great interest, King Cove Corporation request. I'm not sure what the assembly's going to decide whenever this comes up again. For me, I guess working on the Acton Boat Harbor, the city of Acton today is taking the role of, you know, what the borough should be doing. I'm not complaining about it. Please understand that. Just trying to make a point that, you know, could the city of Acton a year from now go back to the assembly and ask for any money that we might have spent on the lighting project that we're going to do in April of this year and hopefully done by September, October. Am I going to have the ability, I guess, to ask for reimbursement back for something that that's their responsibility to do what I'm trying to do. Again, I'm not trying to complain. Please don't get that comment wrong. Just that I'm not sure if we're going to open a can of worms for you guys if we go down that road. I'm not saying that King Coast Corporation shouldn't get their money. I'm just trying to point out that, you know, do other communities have the ability to come back to the assembly at some point after we do something that, you know, the boroughs should be doing. Again, that's not a complaint, and again, I'm not trying to ruffle any feathers. I'm just trying to make a point. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Give the assembly something to think about as they move forward with this. Any other comments on the agenda? Okay. Hearing none, we need a motion and a second for the minutes for the March 14, 2019 meeting. Okay, so we have a motion by Ingrid.
Second.
And a second by Josie?
Yeah.
Okay. So, if there's no additions or corrections to the minute, and there's no objections, the minutes will stand as written. Okay, thank you. Annie, financial report. Oh, wait, first. We need a motion and a second to adopt the financial report. Okay, motion by Paul.
Second.
Second by Ingrid. Discussion, Annie.
Ms. Mayor, I'll back in the assembly before you is the March 2019 financials. I'll just go over a few things I pointed out earlier. On the first page under the general fund, under revenue, we have received, or the borough has received, some of the state shared fisheries tax monies that we were hoping to receive in FY19. These funds, these state shared raw fish program tax or program funds are one of the items that are under consideration in the governor's budget to be cut. So I'm glad we got it for FY19, and we are keeping really close track of what's happening to those monies in FY20. This also affects many of our communities as well. One other item is just under Fund 20 is that the NIFWIF electronic monitoring and the kelp mariculture grants have been added to the financials, and also under revenue for the Fund 22, which has Cold Bay Terminal and helicopter revenues, we have began to receive payments from Maritime as agreed upon from our new EAS agreement with them, or service agreement with them. Any questions?
Annie, I have one question. This is Carol. I have a question. The other revenue, we had budgeted $50,000 and we were at $132,000. What? Can you tell me what that is?
That on the first page?
First page.
Yeah. So those funds, we are way over. That is like Thailand leases. So for instance, we just entered into one with Silver Bay. That's where those monies go.
Okay. So that was the only question. Mm-hmm. You probably told me that before. I'm old.
Oh, that's a question.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Annie, could you? I always have to refresh my memory on these fish taxes, but on the first item, you have item 265, then 266, and 267. And with the legislature undecided on what they're doing, could you just make me feel more comfortable on those three items and what they represent, just so. don't reinterpret it. Okay, thank you.
Yes, I can do my best. So my understanding is that in the state shared fisheries tax program, there's three different taxes. There's the state fish tax, which I believe is the bigger amount that we receive. There's extraterritorial fish tax that we receive for, I think, and somebody could correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's from, like, offshore processors. And then the third one is a landing tax. And those three are all combined into this tax program. And basically, my understanding is that it's approximately $60 million worth of revenue, and the state currently keeps 50% and then distributes the other 50% to all the communities that contribute to this program.
Well, and then, Annie, you mentioned, I think, a while ago, it was 28% of our annual revenues. Mm-hmm. But out of those three items, which one, are they reducing all of them, or just, I'm still a little unclear on which one the legislature is thinking of reducing.
I think it's all three, Paul. I think it's a combination of all three taxes in that program, because they're all combined in the one program. So they're making a cut in the entire program. So all of these would be removed if it passed as the governor's proposing.
Okay, and then the number that we were talking about earlier was about $300,000 potential loss. What's our potential loss again?
So overall or just
yes,
for the shared
fish
tax? So on the shared fish tax, I'm anticipating probably a $2.2 million deficit if it's cut. So that's about 28%. Based off of the FY19 budget, because the 20 budget hasn't been completed yet.
Oh, okay. I was looking at it.
Well, I think the one you're thinking about is the school reimbursement. And now if the house put half back in, then we would be at a loss.
And that's happened, too, but I just forgot the number on the fish tax. I throw these numbers around, and sometimes you go in one end and count the other.
So the other item is the school bond debt reimbursement and the harbor bond debt reimbursement, which is captured on the first page under revenue under state bond rebate. We get currently approximately $650,000 back for school bond debt reimbursement. The House recently passed that they put 50% of that back in, but it still has to go through the Senate and then through the governor, his veto line item power, to see if that can get reinitiated. But we're looking at 50% right now for that. And then the other one is the harbor bond debt reimbursement we currently receive. And that, as far as I've been told, is currently untouched in the House. However, I don't know if it'll make it through the Senate. And then, of course, the governor line veto power. So those two things are in that bond debt rebate line item.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Annie on the financial report? Ingrid?
Not a question per se, but I think this is one of those lines, because it's just a line, and it's not tied into something else, that it has the potential of a veto, and I think we don't have the numbers to override a veto at this point. I think that that's just something we're going to have to deal with at some point. I'm hoping that's not the case, but just put it out there for thought.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? Hearing none, you have a call question on the motion?
Ingrid?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Dulcie?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Samantha? Samantha? Are you still there?
Can you hear me?
I can now. Gotcha.
So, Samantha, we're the question's been called on the March financial report.
Yeah, I had said yes.
Oh.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The February investment report is in your packet, again, for your information. And if anyone has any questions, now would be a good time. If not, we'll move on to the consent agenda. And remember, we've pulled Resolution 1958 out and put it into a regular resolutions under item 10. Annie? Oh, wait. Again, we need a motion for the consent agenda.
Move the consent agenda.
Paul? And we need a second.
I'll second it.
Okay.
This is Carol.
Thank you, Carol. Now, Annie, you can go through.
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck, assembly before you is Resolution 1957, which is in support of full funding from the state of Alaska for the Alaska Online with Libraries program, also referred to as OWL. This is a program that provides rural Alaska libraries with federally funded high-speed internet access, video conferencing capabilities, and information technology training. The state began funding of this in 2013. 96 community libraries across the state, including the Aleutians Eastboro communities of Sandpoint and Cole Bay, currently get this. And this is one of those items that the governor is proposing to not fund in the FY20 budget. So this resolution is in support of fully funding the OWL program. The next one is Resolution 1961. Regarding disposal of surplus, obsolete, or unneeded supplies, the borough has a 2018 Honda outboard motor that's 115 horsepower located in Accutan with approximate value of $4,000. We are asking for assembly approval to surplus this item. The next is Resolution 1962, approving certain unincorporated communities and their respective Native Village Council and or unincorporated nonprofit entity for participation in the FY20 Community Assistance Program. This is something we do on an annual basis to allow the Nelson Lagoon Village Council to receive community assistance. It does filter through the borough because they're unincorporated. The borough gets the money and then gives the money to the Nelson Lagoon Village Council. So we're asking approval to continue to do this for that program. Then the next two, Resolution 1963 is in support of a full proposal to the NOAA Social Behavioral and Economic Research Needs in Aquaculture. And 1964 is in support of a full proposal to the NOAA National Sea Grant Exploring New Aquaculture Opportunities, 2019 federal funding opportunity. And I'll let Charlotte speak on these.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. For the record, I'll just read the memo. As part of the strategic plan, the Natural Resources Department is tasked with finding opportunities for economic diversification of our natural resources. One such opportunity is the development of kelp mariculture in our region. As you know, the borough was awarded $71,456 from NIFWIF to site and develop pilot kelp farms in our borough communities. One of the strategic plan action items includes finding additional funding to continue the kelp mariculture project. Two major objectives of the project are to establish fully operational pilot farms at the selected sites and to explore ways to provide value for the communities and stakeholders in our area. The first grant supports the construction of a pilot farm, which could eventually be used as training and demonstration for interested stakeholders, for research and development of new species and technologies, and et cetera. The borough is collaborating with the Alaska Sea Grant, the University of Alaska Southeast, the Alaska Ocean Cluster on this project, and, of course, stakeholders. We are requesting $100,000 in funding with a 50% match requirement for a two-year project. This results in $25,000 in match requirement for each year, which would be fulfilled in-kind using project partners' time, voluntary stakeholder time, facilities, equipment, and some supplies.
The second grant supports the development of a community-driven cooperative with the intent of reducing risk for new entrants, pooling resources, efficient transfer of information, and exploring value-added processes. We're also requesting $100,000 in funding with a 50% match, but this is for a three-year project, resulting in approximately $16,700 match requirement each year, which would also be fulfilled with project partner and stakeholder time, facilities, equipment, and supplies. The Natural Resources Department is recommending approval of resolutions 1963 and 1964, supporting the submission of full proposals to both funding opportunities.
Are there any questions on any of those? Okay.
Thank you. Question or a motion?
Call a question.
Got it.
Carol. Carol. Yes.
Ingrid?
Yes.
Chelsea?
Chelsea?
Yes. Paul?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Bailey? Yes. Thank you. Motion carries.
Okay, thank you. we are now on to a public hearing on Ordinance 1907. We need a motion to open the public hearing.
Move to open the hearing for Ordinance 1907.
Okay, we have a motion to open for approval of public hearing on Ordinance 1907. We have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, thank you. So, before we start public hearing, then, Annie, you want to touch on this?
Yes, Mayor Osterbach. Ordinance 1907 amends the Borough Code, Section 6.04041, Subsection E2, which is the investment section. At one of our previous meetings on February 14th, the Assembly passed Ordinance 1906, amending the Borough Code to amend borough asset classes. Following this, we were notified that there was a calculation error on the international equity asset class, and it considered substantive enough to come back before the Assembly. So this change just focuses on the targeting percent weighting and range for the international equity to make the calculation correct. If there's any questions.
Okay. Thank you. So at this time, the public hearing is open on Ordinance 1907. Okay, hearing no public. Hearing is
closed. Sam, excuse me?
Okay. Go ahead, Sam.
I'm going to need to leave at 3:30, but Justine is going to stay here. I'm just letting you know.
Okay, that's fine. Question on the call?
Just some comments on this.
Okay.
Go ahead, appropriate. Thank you. At the last meeting, we talked about, somebody talked about this ordinance, and the staff presented reasons why it was needed, and worked with our financial advisors, and it seemed like very good that they caught this minor item, and I think it's not a big deal, but we have to do it. It's important. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Any other? Okay. Hearing none. No questions.
Carol?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Ingrid?
Yes.
Chelsea?
Yes.
Haley?
Yes.
Samantha?
motion carries.
Okay. Thank you. Before us, we have Ordinance 1908. We need a motion to bring on the table and schedule for next meeting. Okay, one of you guys out there, we need a motion and a second for the introduction of Ordinance 1908.
This is Carol. Okay. I'd like to introduce Ordinance 1908.
Second.
Second by Ingrid. Okay. Annie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbach, Assembly, before you is Ordinance 1908, amending Section 2.20.080, Appointments of Officers in Chapter 2.29 of the Aleutian East Borough Code of Ordinances, Finance Department, to clarify the nature of the position of the Borough Finance Director. The purpose of this amendment is to specify that going forward, the position of the Borough Finance Director is similar to the borough's other top appointed officials, which are more confidential in nature, and that the individual who fills that position will in the future serve at the pleasure of the borough mayor. And this will make the finance director who currently works under me would then be in the future serving at the pleasure of the mayor, which is similar to what the natural resources director and the maintenance director do as well. So this would revise the code to that effect. The revision will not apply to the current finance director who has already been appointed the position prior to this revision. Her right to continued employment has already been vested, and the administration has concluded that as a result, she may that this change does not apply to her. This is kind of this position, in my opinion, this position, this is appropriate to make this change for the nature of that position. With that, if there's any questions.
Ingrid?
Mr. Chair, in the workshop, we mentioned just preserving history and putting a memo in the current finance director's file, and I just wanted to get it on the record that we'll take that action so that it reflects what Annie just reported to us, that we're going to maintain her rights as they currently are.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ingrid, for that. Paul?
And just to put it more simple language, Annie, this ordinance changes if our new when we get a new finance officer in the future sometime. It wouldn't affect Roxanne, of course, but just summarize who they'll be working for and what the changes in plain language. Thank you.
So, I believe the way it's written, the next finance director that comes on board, per our personnel handbook, will now be following that, and the finance officer will work under the direction of the mayor in the future.
And right now, Roxanne's working under the direction
of the administrator.
And then that will continue for till the end of Roxanne's employment,
or in
the future sometime. Mm-hmm. We want it around forever, of course. But yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Ingrid?
The other clarification with that, though, is that as a direct employee under the mayor, they're an at-will employee.
Yeah.
And we're preserving Roxanne's protection as a...
Yes, she'll stay.
She still has to be removed for cause under her current protection.
Right.
She would not become an at-will employee.
Yeah, you're right. No, this doesn't pertain to Roxanne at all. She just continues on until she retires at her current.
And we have no intention of encouraging her to do so. This is just a administrative change to bring this in line with our other department heads.
Yes, this has nothing to do with trying to get rid of Roxanne or anything else. It's just trying to bring that position in alignment of what the handbook has always said. So basically, Annie, Mary, the staff, and I guess have been going through our personnel handbook, and we're changed. You know, we've changed over time. We've put, actually, Annie wasn't even, her position wasn't even on there for a while. We put that back in. Tina's position as clerk, in a depended on what part of the policy you looked at. In one portion, she worked for the mayor, and the other portion, she worked for the assembly. So we had to clean that up, and so the clerk actually gets appointed by the mayor but works for the assembly. So we're just going through over time and finding errors that are in there and correcting them is what we're doing. So it's a, it doesn't have anything to do with any current personnel that we have. It's just bringing things into line where they should be.
Thank you. And Mayor Ostenbach, just to clarify, this is to the code, not the employee handbook, to the borough code.
Okay. Okay, so with that, if there's no other questions or comments on it, we will go ahead. So we have the motion to schedule for a public hearing at our next regular meeting on May 9th. With that, question?
Josie? Josie?
Yes.
Ingrid?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Haley? Haley?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay. Thank you. So, before us, we have our resolution. So the first one up is resolution 19-58, which is honoring the King Cole High School boys and girls basketball team as the 2019 boys and girls ASAA 1A basketball state championships. And we pulled this out of the consent, and I think we have some family members that comment. Paul? Thank you.
Motion.
We have to have a motion. Okay. First, we need a motion. We got all excited about giving this award to these kids. First, we need a motion and a second.
I would like to move the resolution and honoring the Kinko basketball teams for their achievements.
Thank you. Second. Paul, second. Now we can have discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was fortunate enough to be in Anchorage during the tournament as well as, I think, the whole darn town of King Cove was there. And it was really a great tournament. And King Cove boys and girls teams did an excellent job of not only representing King Cove, but representing the region. And so I think it was pretty good, pretty neat. And everybody... everybody appreciated all the hard work that went into that. And I know we're going to bring up a special resolution to give it to them sometime after we adopt this. And well deserved. So I'll just applaud a little bit.
Any others?
Mr. Mayor, I would like to applaud their efforts, too. It was tremendous. It was tremendous that one of the teams made it, and it just made it extra special that both the boys and girls made it. And congratulations to the coaches, the community, and the families, and the kids. The kids were spectacular.
Any other comments?
Mr. Mayor?
All right. Yes.
Ernie Weiss here, former teacher in King Cove, big fan of T. Jackson rookies, and I just wanted to put my two cents in. I was fortunate enough to go to all the games as well. The whole staff here in the Anchorage office went to the first game of the Sandpoint boys, and that was a lot of fun, too. But well done, King Cove. Well done.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? All righty. So, yeah, I think I didn't get to go out to them, but we got to listen to them on the radio. Thankful that they were on there. Very exciting games. And I think it's quite an honor for King Cove to have both the boys and the girls come home with the championships. You don't see that very often, so I kind of want them to prove me wrong and bring them back home again next year. So, with that, question on the motion.
Paul?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Ingrid?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Thank you. Motion carries.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Resolution 1950, we need a motion and a second.
So moved. This is Carol.
Okay, thank you, Carol. Second? Okay. Motion dies for lack of a second.
Which one are we doing? 59. 59? He did.
He said.
Hang on just a minute, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, so just so you guys are clear, the motion before us is 1959, supporting the no-action alternative in the draft environmental impact statement for the proposed Pebble Mines project. We did have a motion on the floor.
We have a first.
We have a first, but we never got a second. So that's. So why did you want me to wait for a second?
I don't know. Because you had said 50 once, so we thought we were on the wrong one, but it is 59.
So, okay, with that clarification, do we have a second? Okay, so motion dies for lack of a second. So, on to Resolution 19-6, amending Section 19.01 of the Aleutians Eastboro Employee Handbook. Any other motion?
Resolution 19-60.
Okay, a motion by Paul.
Second.
Second by Ingrid. Discussion. Annie, or explanation, I guess.
Yes, Mayor Osterbach and Assembly. Before you is Resolution 1960, amending Section 9.01 of the Aleutians East Borough Handbook. The Aleutians East Handbook outlines the borough's personnel policies. Section 9.01 governs the schedule by which the borough pays its employees. Currently, the borough employees are paid semi-monthly on the 15th and the last day of the month for the current pay period. For instance, employees are paid on the 15th for the work conducted the 1st through the 15th. Proposed Resolution 1960 would amend Section 19.01 of the Employee Handbook to make the borough's pay schedule biweekly and would include the earnings for all work performed through the end of the previous pay period. The first day in each two-week payroll period will be a Sunday, and the last day will be the second following Saturday. Pay shall be distributed on the Friday immediately following the end of the pay period, unless that day is a holiday, in which case it will be distributed on the first borough business day immediately preceding the holiday. This change will make paydays on Fridays, except for instances in which a Friday is a holiday, in which case payments would be made on the first business day preceding the regularly scheduled payday. It would improve the method of paying hourly, and it would help us improve the method of paying our hourly employees. These changes would include changing our pay periods from 24 pay periods to 26, but the employees' paychecks might reduce slightly. However, the overall salary will remain the same. If the Assembly chooses to approve this, this change will go into effect on July 1 of 2019. I've had discussions with all the staff, letting them know that this is going to be presented to you for your consideration so they're not surprised, and I believe that this will give them ample time to adjust things that they need to adjust to the new pay schedule. With that, the administration recommends approval of Resolution 1960.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? All? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I know this is, at least you said it was a priority of yours last year, and you've been working on it along with the staff, and I think you did some very good work here. And I think it's an improvement. It's a little clearer for the employees, and it's going to help the borough quite a bit. Thanks.
Okay. So, Ingrid.
I think this gives the staff a little time to react to the time cards and stuff when they're coming in, and I think it's pretty standard practice, so I'll be supporting it.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Do you want to call a question?
Paul?
Yes.
Ingrid?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Carol?
Yes.
Bailey?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Before, we don't have any old business before us. Under new business, we have two items, and they're discussion items only. So we'll start with King Cole Corporation reimbursement request. Discussion item. Annie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbach and Assembly. Before you is a memo that I have drafted regarding a request we received from the King Cove Corporation for reimbursement. I'm going to read this pretty much verbatim. But on April 12, 2018, the Aleutians East Borough received a letter of request from the King Cove Corporation stating that a few years back, King Cove Corporation presented a letter of request to the borough for some form of reimbursement for costs incurred in regard to the road between King Cove and Cold Bay. At that time, we were told to resubmit a letter when the hovercraft was sold. The King Cove Corporation has since submitted the attached letter, which is in the packet, requesting reimbursement in the amount of $102,409.59 for amounts that were given to the city of King Cove and reimbursements from travel that the King Cove Corporation paid to the borough. They continue to state that these reimbursement request amounts do not count the travel between King Cove, Anchorage, and King Cove for Della Trumbull and other shareholders participating in the process. The reimbursement amounts the King Cove Corporation is requesting are $90,000 in payments that were made to the city of King Cove and $12,409.59 were payments that the Aleutians East they've made to the Aleutians East Borough for a grand total of $102,409.59. All the backup documentation for these requests are in the packet. The next section are just assumptions that I have made since I was not involved in any of these discussions. These are just my assumptions. So the administration does not have a copy of the original letter that the King Cove Corporation submitted to the borough a few years ago, and its administration is in the understanding that there was not a formal written agreement with the King Cove Corporation to reimburse them for the expenses. It is also administration's understanding that there was not a formal agreement between the City of King Cove and the King Cove Corporation for the $90,000 that was paid, but it was due to a request that the City of King Cove made to help pay for some Eisenbeck environmental impact activities, which included consultants, travel, special studies, surveys, et cetera. And the King Cove Corporation agreed to pay these amounts in three payments. In the future, the borough does recommend, or the borough attorney does recommend that no further reimbursements be made until there's a written agreement between the borough and the King Cove Corporation and or any other organization that's asking for any money. To date, just to kind of go over an overview of some of the expenditures, the borough has reimbursed the City of King Cove the following funds for King Cove Access Projects: $625,000 for documented project costs incurred by the city between FY07 and FY15, which was included in the borough's FY15 budget. Did we lose someone?
Did we lose anybody? Josie, you still on?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
$402,000 was paid, and $402,748.26 was paid in July 2017. $388,446.63 was paid in March 2018. With those three payments, that totaled $1,416,194.80. And to clarify, the payments that were in July 17th and March 2018, the borough did get reimbursement when the hovercraft was sold for those expenses. The borough has also been appropriating $100,000 in the last few budget cycles to be used to offset some of the city costs for the King Cove Road. The total for FY 16, 17, and 18 is $270,810.98. In my memo, that total amount is incorrect. My math was wrong, so the actual amount is $1,687,005.87. The borough is also paying for some additional items for the project, such as litigation fees, but that is being paid out of a DCCED grant that we have with the state of Alaska. The borough is requesting direction from the assembly on how to proceed. Due to the amount of the request, this decision falls outside the mayor's spending authority and is therefore at the discretion of the assembly. Three potential options on how to proceed are outlined below. There may be others, but these are just three options. One is do not pay the reimbursement request for the following reasons: lack of a written agreement, stale invoices, and some of them are 10 years old. Two, pay all or a portion of the request with contingencies. Contingencies could include that this is a one-time and final payment, or any future payment to KCC or any other organization would have to be pre-approved and agreed to in writing. There is a sample MOU in the packet that our attorney has drafted that can be used in the future for any agreements. Or three, pay all or a portion of the request in response to the April 12, 2018 letter. If the assembly decides to pay all or a portion of the request, this will need to be approved via resolution at the May 9th meeting or another meeting, and funds for this reimbursement could be appropriated from the borough hovercraft proceeds, which is currently reflected in our financials. If there's any questions.
Okay, Paul?
Thank you. It seems, Mr. Mayor, that we have two separate questions before us. One is about reimbursement of this request, and in which, as far as I'm concerned, we need a little additional info by next meeting when it's probably going to come out. But the second item, I don't know if we need to take action on this memorandum of understanding, if we need to have that as a policy. Or what do we need to do about the future? We can control the future. We can't control the past very well, but what did you mean with this memorandum of understanding, Annie, and how did you see the borough have to take action for that to be standard operating procedure?
Mayor Osterbacka, Assemblymember Grunholt, in my opinion, no. I think this could be done as an internal policy that administration follows. I don't think a resolution is necessary for that personally. But I do think it is important to have an MOU, an MOUA, or some sort of agreement in writing for any sort of reimbursement that we agree to, because if it's a handshake deal that was done 10 years ago, I didn't work here. So I don't know if it happened or it didn't happen, because there's nothing in writing. So I think it's really important that in the future, that when we do, or if we do, agree to something like this, that it is in writing, so that people 10 years from now can go back and say, yes, we did say we do that, and here's the documentation that proves it. It would make all of our lives a lot easier.
Okay. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you.
Yes. This is Carol. Hey. I agree with Annie totally. I think whatever we do has to be in writing. It looks like a lot of stuff was said and handshaked or whatever else, and they can't find stuff. So I believe that an MOU, whether Annie just works with the entity and figures it out, but I think the MOU is a really good thing. And I think I'd like to, seeing it's new business, we don't have to take any action on it now, move it to the next meeting and have a better understanding of what people are thinking and have time to check on things.
I prefer not to see the amount go up, but, you know, but for now, I think that's kind of how I would look at it.
Okay. Thank you. Ingrid?
With that comment in mind, there was some mention of a possible meeting that might have minutes. If staff could take a moment to see if anything exists like that, and if it doesn't, so be it, but that could be helpful.
Ingrid, I think during the workshop it was brought up that there was a meeting in King Cove, mm-hmm. and during the break, the clerk researched that and sent to all of the assembly members the placeholder for that, so you can go into the old packet and you can bring up the packet that includes the workshop and the regular meeting from King Cove at that time. Tina, did you add anything else into that? Would you?
I provided the link to the April 16, 2015 packet, as well as the minutes and the agenda attached to that email I sent you. The workshop and the minutes and the meeting were separate agendas, so the meeting didn't have the topic.
Oh, anyway, you'll have what's there. Okay. Do we have any other assembly comments? Okay. So, you know, just to, because of the discussion that's been going on here, one of the things that we have been doing is going through a lot of the issues that are before us, and there's so many things going on in the borough that we've been moving along, doing white papers, and making sure that the clerk, when I got here, beat up on me about we need to do more resolutions, so she has more resolutions now than she knows what to do with. But saying that, so anytime somebody asks something, it's a lot easier to go in and find documentation having the resolutions or ordinances in place. So that's why you see so many resolutions now. It's for the benefit of those that'll, us while we're here, and those that'll come along behind us. So if there's no other discussion on this now, I think we covered it quite well in the workshop, and we had comments from Della from the corporation and from Gary on what he remembers from the city of King Cove. So I think there's information is there for everyone to look at. And like Annie said, you know, this is a decision for the assembly to make. So the next time you'll see it on the agenda, then it'll be on May 9th. And if you're still not comfortable, then we can move it back another meeting, have a discussion on it. With that, we'll go ahead and move on to the GEO bond white paper discussion. Annie?
Yes, Mayor, I'll back an assembly. In the packet is a memo regarding the Aleutian Borough bond information. This is about a 10-page document that outlines everything I could find to put in a 10-page document, I guess. So just a little bit of background. Per Alaska statute, a municipality may acquire, construct, improve, and equip capital improvements and issue negotiable or non-negotiable general obligation bonds for these purposes. Based off the statute, the borough has gone out and acquired bond debt for numerous capital improvement projects over the years. Currently, as of June 30th, 2018, we still have outstanding 2010 Series A and B bonds, 2011 refunding series 3 bond and a 2015 refunding series 1 bond and a 2016 refunding series 3 bond. The first section of this goes over the bond information and shows that since 1990 where our bond funds have gone. We have put $9 million into Actan, $2 million into Cold Bay, $4.5 million into False Pass, King Cove, $5.1 million. Nelson Lagoon, $1.5 million, and Sandpoint, $6.4 million. And then in regards to the school, there was a total school project bond of $18,116,000. And there's also a miscellaneous bond that was done in 1990 in an amount of $134,000. So it totals the AB, total bonds was $46,750,000. So that's just some history of where the bond funds have gone. The next section is basically just a summary of our existing bonds, which I mentioned earlier. So this goes through, like, for instance, the 2016 refunding series, refunded the 2007 bonds, which were issued to refund the 2003 bonds and the 1998 bond. It's all explained here. If people are interested, I do have all the ordinances and resolutions in one location. If people would like to read them and learn more, it's very detailed, hard to capture in a memo, but it is there. So this 2016 refunding series bond debt, we still have $16,120,000 in bond debt remaining for this bond. These bonds are associated with one item in our financials, which is the False Pass Harbor project. There's $331,710.39 still in our financials that's associated with this bond. And also it's reflected in our APCM, which is the last permanent capital management Series E bond. There's still money sitting in there, and I have hired an arbitrage consultant to help me figure out if we're in compliance with the IRS, and then from there we can determine what to do with the money. So we're working on that. The next one's the 2015 refunding series, which refunds the 2016 bonds that we took out. It was for $5 million for the Actam Boat Harbor. There are about $1,415,000 in bond debt remaining for this bond. These funds have been spent out of our financials, and there's still some money sitting in our APCM account. And once again, I have an arbitrage consultant looking at that to make sure we're in compliance with the IRS on those funds. The next one is the 2011 Series A and B bonds. These refunded the 2001 A Series bonds. The 2011 Series A was an amount of $2,550,000 for the Actan and False Pass schools, and the 2011 Series bonds was for $1 million for the Actan and False Pass boat harbor and dock facilities. There is about $835,000 remaining for the 2000 in bond debt remaining for these bonds, and there is no financials or APCM account associated with these bonds.
About feeling a soldier's innocence or guilt, that is for the courts to decide.
The co-founder of WikiLeaks was arrested in London today after living 7 years in the Ecuadorian embassy there.
It's Thursday, April 11th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
Other transportation or economic development projects in the amount of $2 million. That Series A was used and approved by the Assembly by Resolution 1217 to be used to assist in the payment of the Sandpoint Small Boat Harbor Renovation Phase 1 project. There is approximately $3,530,000 of bond debt remaining for these 2010 bonds. There is not anything reflected in our financials, but we do have an APCM account associated with this that has some monies, and I'm trying to work with our auditors and everyone to figure out that bond as well. The next section is long-term debt. This is out of our draft FY18 audit. It shows that we have a general obligation bonds payable amount as of June 30th, 2018 of $21,900,000. And then there's some issuance premiums, and then that means the total bonds payable is $24,417,680. The audit goes on to reflect what we owe for each bond, which I have already mentioned, and then it also tells us how much that we are required to pay back in bond debt every year. So, for instance, for FY 2020, we will need to pay back $2,482,416. I am struggling with my numbers, but about $2.4 million. So then if you go to the very last page, this is just an outline of all our outstanding bond history from 1998. It actually goes all the way back to 1990 to the present. It shows you what elections things were voted at and how the money has been refunded. So, for instance, the 2016 2016 refunding series refunded the 2017, which in turn refunded the 2003 and 1998. So this kind of gives you a really big overview of everything that's been outlined in the memo. I hope this helps. Like I said, if you have any questions, please let me know. I want to thank everyone that helped me gather all the information and put this together to something that hopefully makes sense to you all. So with that, if there's any questions.
Thank you, Annie. Questions for Annie? Paul?
During the workshop, Mr. Mayor, Annie mentioned that she'll have the remaining school bond debt, which we're going to have some, have to chip in a little more if the state isn't going to, I guess, but I just kind of want to wish Annie and you and the rest of the staff good luck trying to get the ordinance written that are going to deal with next year with the legislature and fish taxes and school bond reimbursement and other things up in the air. It's going to be tough to figure it out. And this bond might play a role, and if there's undisbursed bond funds, I don't know if it would play a role, but we probably would know more by next meeting, I suppose. So, mm-hmm. So thanks very much. Good job trying to put that together. I know it wasn't easy.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments on the white paper for fuel bonds? Okay. So, and I would like to, you know, I'm really happy the staff took the time to develop this white paper. It gives us a history of the bonds, pretty much. And, you know, as the assembly knows, we've been doing white papers. We've got one on the Kinko-Kobe Road, and we got one on the Acton Marine Link. So this one will kind of go with them. So it gives the current staff and assembly some background on everything, and hopefully these will all be living documents as we go forward. So a lot of this, I mean, I was out in Anchorage one day, and I went into Annie's office, and when she was doing this geo bond, she took all her pictures down in her office. The whole darn office from one end to the other was little sticky notes, trying to figure out all this money and all the bonds. So it was pretty impressive. And I guess Mary went out and found the right kind of paper and repapered her walls with stick-on big white sheets. So she had something to practice on. But again, I really appreciate the work you're doing. I think it's going to make everything for all a lot easier as we go forward. So with that, there's nothing else on the geo bonds. We'll go down to reports and updates. Annie, I'll give it back to you.
All right. Mayor, I'll start back in assembly. Please, my report. Just a quick update on the King Cove Access Project. Work is being done with the Department of Interior to implement the King Cove Land Exchange Agreement between the Department of Interior and the King Cove Corporation that was signed on January 22, 2018. On March 18, 2019, the Department of Interior finalized the survey of the lands which are identified to be included in the proposed exchange, which now sets the stage to begin a value appraisal of the surveyed lands. So we are kind of moving forward on that, and I'll keep you apprised of that as we move forward. In the meantime, though, the Alaska Federal Court on March 29th rendered a judgment holding the land exchange in violation of a process requirement of the Federal Administration Procedures Act. Since that decision, the King Cove Kobe Group has been consulting with the Department of Interior on the best course of action for continuing the goals and implementation of the agreement. So we're kind of in the beginning stages since that decision by the judge just came out. I don't have much more to share in regards to the proposed actions that will be implemented. But on April 9th, just so you do know, the borough, I authorized Steve Silver to respond to Judge Gleason's court decision in amount not to exceed $27,000 to respond to the judge's decision, and that this will be paid out of the DCED grant that we have for this. But we're going to try to battle this and move forward. So as I learn more, I'll let you know. I'll keep you updated. The second part is the Actan Harbor and False Pass Harbor bond debt. I kind of mentioned this during the financials discussion, but at the last meeting, Assemblymember Shangan had asked what the allocation was on the bond debt reimbursement. So for FY20, I do, if this gets passed by the legislature and the governor, I would anticipate getting $166,400 for False Pass and $215,308 for the Actan Harbor. These funds, as of right now, are still in the operating budget, and there's been no attempt to remove it in House finance, but we'll see what occurs at the Senate and governor level. A few things. As you know, since this budget came out, it's been really, the state budgets came out, it's just been an insane process. So between Mark Hickey providing updates, Alaska Municipal League, we are trying our hardest to testify on all the items that impact the borough and our communities as much as we can. To date, Mayor Ostrovac testified in front of House Finance. We've done it in front of Senate Education Committee, also the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Mary today snuck off and did between the assembly work session and the meeting, she went and testified in front of Senate Finance just to talk about what our impacts are on the borough communities and how basically we don't support what Governor Dunleavy is doing. We have also been meeting with the Alaska Municipal League and the communities that are affected by the proposed budget cuts and kind of devising a cohesive strategy on how to move forward on this, which is kind of exciting in a way because we're all working together to address the same issues. And also, Mayor Ostrovac signed and we sent a letter to all the state representatives about school bond debt reimbursement. And we've received actually three responses from the representatives about this, that they understand that this is not a good idea to have this cut. And they've since put 50% back in. So it's important to reach out to the legislators on these issues. They do listen, which is reassuring, because you never know, but they do read it, and it's good, and I think they're taking our comments into consideration. So we'll continue to stay on that, but it seems to change every 5 minutes about what's happening down there. So we'll try to update you as we can, but it's constantly moving. A few other things, as prep items for this meeting, we're still assisting with completing the FY18 audit. I think we're really close. There's just two items the auditors need. One is the arbitrage information I'm getting from the bonds, and then there's some items on some stuff on the Actan Harbor, just on the accounting of that. So we're trying to finish that. We also are implementing items on the corrective action plan. The audit called out a few things that we needed to address, so we are addressing those. One is with personnel action forms that employees have to sign and have in their files. It outlines just what they're currently being paid and all the deductions and withdrawals. And as those change, we'll update those on a regular basis. But that's something we were required to do, and we have since implemented that. And then the other two items are three items we're working on and hope to have done by June 30th or soon thereafter. We're working on the employee handbook updates. One of them was this payday item that you just recently approved. Thank you for that. And we're going to start trying to complete the draft so we can roll that out to you and update our policy. And then there's just a bunch of other things. So it's been very busy. Everybody's been doing a great job on all the borough business that's going on. So with that, if there's any questions.
Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Annie, I'm just going back to the first part of your report. You were talking about the King Cove Road, which is always an important thing on the borough's agenda. But I think there's a new Secretary of Interior that just got sworn in and confirmed, maybe today or yesterday. But I don't know what the plan is to see where that the new Secretary will be on King Cove Road. But at some point pretty soon, I think we have
we have to do some more planning on that project. You know, this phase, whatever we're funding now is coming, probably coming to an end. And I know in the past when we've talked about how we're going to deal with legal issues in particular on King Cove Road, we always were inclined, or at least there was an inclination, I'll rephrase that, there's an inclination perhaps to put out a bid for services, and that doesn't prevent anybody from applying for it, but just to see if we have a fresh look on ideas on how to solve this perplexing problem. And I don't know when that'll come. Pretty soon, I'm guessing. But perhaps, you know, we have two meetings in May, then no meeting in June. So I'm looking for a little more of a comprehensive update, perhaps at our May meeting, one of the May meetings, to kind of give it a little more background on where we are with the lawsuit and our response to it, if anybody knows by then, for sure. And I guess that's... Oh, the bonding thing, too, Annie. I guess I said enough about that, too. But thank you. That's it. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else? Ingrid?
Annie, I just wanted to say thank you for all the work on the bonding issue. I really appreciated the history and have a much better understanding, I think, of that history. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. So is Mary back?
She is. I am. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the Assembly. My report's in your packet for your review. First up is the False Pass Harbor House. This is on the strategic plan this year. This quarter, I'll begin working on the RFP for the design of the False Pass Harbor House. The city of False Pass has indicated that they would like to use a prefab construction for this facility, which is great. And I expect the RFP to be issued early in quarter two, as shown on the strategic plan. And just a reminder, we do have $100,000 appropriated for this. So I'm hoping to get that out a little early, probably by the end of May. That's my hope. Next is the Cold Bay Clinic. As I mentioned before, we're working on somewhat of a redesign for the clinic just for updates to bring us up to code, as well as some value-added engineering stuff that would decrease the construction costs, since we are planning on paying for it out of our own coffers. LCG, who is our contractor for the design, has given us a list of possible updates that could be made to the design. So we are currently reviewing those. I just had a conversation with Angela yesterday about these. So we're still looking at those, but we're working on that. In addition, I'm also soliciting quotes for the cost estimation work, which is identified on the strategic plan for quarter one. So basically, as soon as the design is finished, we'll submit the design to the cost estimator, and in short order, we'll get a cost estimate back, which will help us in our budgeting process and figure out how much extra money we need. But hopefully, with the value-added engineering work, we're anticipating that we'll lower the cost of construction, at least a little bit. So that's what I'm working on for strategic plan. Additionally, for the clinic, I'm also working on an MOA between the borough, the city, and EAT just to outline roles and responsibilities for the project. Since we are taking on the construction and project management role for this project, we want to make sure everyone's on the same page in terms of roles once the building is completed. So that's also something that's outlined on the strategic plan, and I'm currently working on that. Any questions so far? Okay, cool. So moving on to other items I'm working on, I attended the A-Team meeting on behalf of the borough, I guess last week now, April 3rd. In that meeting, I shared a brief update to the group of the governor's proposed budget impacts to the borough, which, as we know, is about 40% of our budget. And I was basically kind of, we're just giving each other updates on what our organizations are doing. I think the A-Team is kind of in a transition role right now, trying to figure out exactly how we want to move forward, but I'm definitely going to continue working with that group and attending the meetings as scheduled. Additionally, I attended the EAT and APIA Opioid Task Force meeting April 3rd. It was really interesting. It was kind of a follow-up meeting to the task force meeting that they held back in October of 2018. And the outcome of that meeting was that several communities have been tasked tasked with forming community working groups to come up with community-based solutions or ideas of how to address the opioid and substance misuse in each community. So it's a community-specific led initiative that would be unique to each community. So the goal is to bring all of those ideas back to the group at the next meeting on May 14th. So EAT personnel in all the clinics have been or will be tasked with putting together those meetings in each community. So I'd encourage each person listening on the radio or assembly member to contact their clinic personnel and to see when that meeting will be scheduled and attending that meeting when they take place. And then, in addition, other projects I'm working on or assisting Annie with include the employee handbook update, as she mentioned, the Cold Bay Terminal lease, preparing the FY20 budget, bridge inspections that we have in some of our communities, and hazmat surveys for the schools. So, busy time. Anyway, that's my my update. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to take them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. Questions for
her? Hi, Mary. This is Daly.
Hi.
Cold Bay. I was just wondering about the new borough building, you know, for the, have you guys decided anything, or are they working with you and Air Raven to move in there?
Thank you. So we're still in the process of working on the terminal draft lease. We're working with our consultant on that right now. So as soon as we're ready to present that to the airlines, we'll do that. But we haven't presented that yet. We're still working on the draft.
Okay, I heard you were working on it. I just didn't know how far along you were. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Mary. Laura.
Thank you, Mayor Osterbach and members of the Assembly. As Annie mentioned earlier, there was a decision from the U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason March on the 29th, and I have a typo in my report. I said May, but I meant March. Anyway, that ruled that the King Cove Land Exchange Agreement violates, that was signed by then Secretary Ryan Zinke, that it violates federal law. And in her decision, Judge Gleason had said that Secretary Zinke was required to acknowledge that the road was a reversal of interior policy. And basically, she said, she was quoted in the ruling as saying that while an agency is certainly permitted to rebalance relevant factors to arrive at a new policy, an agency may not simply disregard prior factual findings, and in that she's referring to the 2013 Record of Decision, without a reasoned explanation. So basically, at this point, the groups that are involved, the City of King Cove, the borough, City of Cold Bay, the tribes, are considering next steps. In the meantime, as you can imagine, we received quite a few media inquiries wanting a response, and we have prepared a release ahead of time, anticipating either way it may go. We were hoping we wouldn't have to use the release that said that we were disappointed in the ruling, but that is what happened. Della had responded to a few of the calls. I had sent out the release. That had appeared in ABC News, Washington Post, New York Times, Associated Press, U.S. News and World Report, CNN, a number of others, Alaska Public Radio, Anchorage Daily News, Alaska Journal of Commerce, KTU, KTVA, et cetera. So quite a bit of media interest, and we'll see where it goes from here. Other than that, I'm working on a current in the loop. Has to do with stories with the legislative committee hearings that you yourself, Mayor Osterbach, as well as Annie and recently Mary, have testified in, having to do with the overall impacts to the borough as well as the shared fish tax and, of course, the school bond debt reimbursement. There's been, as Annie mentioned, a lot of changes that have happened, gosh, almost seems like almost daily or hourly. And so I've been going back and forth with Mark Hickey today because I'm writing a couple stories just to see if based on what has happened, what has changed, what changes I need to reflect in these stories. And I've got several quotes in there, not only from Annie and Mayor Osterbach, but also from Gary Henning and Mayor Joe Boreskin, as well as Jordan Keeler, having to do with Sandpoint, Actan, and King Cove and how those communities will be impacted. So I'm working on that right now, and I had another interlude that went out on March 25th that had to do with Swampsea and the legislative update. A lot of it focused on the budget, since that's on the minds of a lot of people. So that's kind of where things are right now, and if anyone has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Question? Okay, hearing none. Ernie, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My report is also in your packet, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I was just going to touch on a few things in it, starting with the council meeting that just finished up on Monday. Of course, I show that the mothership adjustments did pass. Cod that was being delivered offshore will now again be coming onshore, which, of course, is how we get our fish tax revenue. Another final action, rockfish will have to be retained by fixed-gear vessels in the Gulf and in the Bering Sea, pot-gear, jig, and long-line rockfish. If you discard them, they float. They don't survive. And so they must be retained, but only a certain amount can go into commerce, I think 15%, and then they'll have to be donated or kept for home pack or whatever. Interestingly enough, at the statewide meeting at the Board of Fish, they passed a proposal to force guided sport fishers to carry a device that releases rockfish back down at their depth, and that in hopes that they will survive and they decompress. C7 observer fees, they're talking about raising the observer fees. There's not enough value in the fisheries to support the current level of observers. Right now it's at 1.25%, and that's shared by the processors and the harvesters, but of course it's paid all by the harvesters, really, because they just lower the price of the fish. But that can only go up to 2%, so they're really scrambling to figure out how to make that happen. Of course, our grant to try to get EM on trawl vessels, it helps, or at least is trying to help defray some of that cost of observer fees. There was an interesting staff tasking item that was called, like, closing the parallel loophole. There are fishers that are fishing in the parallel fishery in the Bering Sea cod fishery, so they're trying to close that parallel fishery loophole, which is an interesting item because there are fishermen in the Gulf that fish that don't have a federal LLP that fish in that parallel fishery, and if you start closing that, it's just interesting, and we'll have to be watching that as that goes forward. But that came up in staff tasking. And then June item, I talk about the major item there will be changing the pollock and cod seasons and allocations. Looking at the Board of Fisheries appointees, you'll see that Israel Payton has been reappointed. Marit Carlson Van Dort from Chignik has been appointed. Jared Godfrey and Carl Johnstone, who was the former chair. I listened to the Senate Resources Committee hearing. There was UFA is trying to make sure Carl Johnstone does not get on there. So there was a lot of public comment against him. Marit Carlson Van Dort, of course, is of concern because she has extensive family in the Chignik area. She's fished as a crew member on a seiner for many years. She did work for Pebble Partnership years ago, but she came out in her testimony as a kind of against the project, and she was real well spoken. So I know people would like to come out against her, but it's going to be a tough road to hoe. So It's a Cook Inlet year at the board cycle, plus Kodiak. I don't think Kodiak's very happy with some of these appointees either. So I was also just going to speak to some of the legislation on Mark Hickey's agenda, just to mention that there's some interesting things about House Bill 35, House Bill 116, Senate Bill 22, Senate Bill 90, and Senate Bill 99. I won't go into those, but I am kind of tracking those because there's definitely some interest, and I can speak to them if you wish. And then Mark Hickey also sent out the latest draft that Hoffman's staff is putting together on putting the second name on the permit. There's some legal questions on it. It doesn't sound. I talked to Tim Bressendorf on Hoffman's staff today. They don't think that it's going to be ready for prime time this first year of the session, but possibly next year. So I'll take any questions on my report. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ernie. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ernie, you mentioned in an email about the ADAC lawsuit and the legislation that Dan Sullivan and Don Young are trying to push through Congress, which makes everybody nervous anytime there's legislation in Congress. People try to add things to it. But I don't know if anybody's talked to our lobbyists in D.C. Just get a quick update on if it may or may not have affect us a little bit. I think there is a delegation of alley-oops of some sort going back to ADAC. I don't know when, but pretty soon, sounds like any day. So
that's
an interesting thing going on, and I'd like to know more about it, but I don't. Thanks.
Quickly, I'll address it. Paul, thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the court ruled that Amendment 113, a set-aside to allow Aleutian Island cod, the first 5,000 metric tons, be delivered to either ADAC or another Aleutian Island community, ADAC, basically, that was she struck it down. And so either the council has to go back and fix it, or it has to go through some sort of legislative action. Talk to Steve Miner, who's kind of working for the ADAC community. He said that the vehicle that they have is what's called the DriftNet Modernization and Bycatch Reduction Act, which was reintroduced last month by Dianne Feinstein. The problem with that, Cantwell is from Washington, and of course the Amendment 80 people would just rather see the ability to catch that and process it offshore rather than wait until ADAC gets their fair share. So if the council acts on it, it's not going to be soon enough for next year, and ADAC could then lose their processing. So they're trying to get it through legislation, and that's all I got on that.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Ernie, his report? Paul?
Well, I know there's been some, you know, during staff tasking, I listened to part of it on the radio or on the computer, I guess. I listened to Ernie commented, Kylie, trying to get the control date and, you know, to keep boats from moving down here for the cod fishery. And so there's still, and of course, Kodiak representatives were opposed to that. Giuliani publicly stated they did not want a control date. But I think it can get on the agenda. I think if at the June meeting, perhaps some form of a sideboard on the action they're taking to Bering Sea, or just a control date or some version of that, that could be maybe added to the October agenda, so we don't get a huge influx of votes here in the future. And I think we'd have enough votes, but I don't know for sure. But I know you testified, Ernie. Could you kind of just give us a short version of how you see that?
Sure. So at the March meeting, and before the March meeting, our staff met with cod fishermen from Sandpoint and King Cove, and we kind of followed their lead on how they want to go as far as any potential fishery management changes. And they said they want a control date. They would like to see sideboards, and they were going to dust off their proposal from the Gulf Trawl Bycatch Management Program. And the assembly kind of agreed with those, and we sent a memo to Rachel Baker, Deputy Commissioner of the Department, who sits on the council. And since we're kind of taking our cues from the fishermen, I told Kylie I'll go ahead and back up his request. He made his request, and I also testified that we need a control date. What Julie Bonnie testified was that, well, control date doesn't really mean anything unless you've got a management action coming up. And so if the state comes back at the next meeting and with some sort of motion as far as a management action, you might be able to get a control date, possibly with some sort of sideboard action on the Bering Sea, but I'm not sure, Paul. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Okay. If that's it, then I think we have... is the kelp queen there? Does she want to...
Present. Mayor Osterbach in Assembly. So I will start just talking about some of the projects we've got going on. You all know we have the NIFWIF grant for Trawl EM. So during the council meeting, I met with PFC and Saltwater just to talk about the status of the project and the results so far. And I don't think they're quite ready to release the actual data that's come out, but I will say that this project is proving to be like a really poster child for EM. I've read about a lot of issues that other EM projects have had trying to get it implemented, and we have stakeholders and fishermen who are really engaged in the process and who are very cooperative. We had all of the systems installed before A season on a crunch. It's amazing that we were able to get the techs out there and get it all done before A season started. And it seems to be providing sort of the intended data, and we seem to be getting some preliminary results that we were hoping to see. So it was also an opportunity for PSC. Kylie was there kind of representing the fishermen who had the systems installed, and he was able to relay some of the feedback from the initial A season about the technology, what was working, what wasn't, and was able to give that to Saltwater. So I think they will be planning a trip for technicians to come out to King Cove and Sandpoint to fix some of the systems before the next season. And that'll actually be before summer because there won't be time after salmon. They'll transition right back into groundfish. So that was a really good meeting. We will probably be applying for another year of funding from NIFWIF to continue the project. We'd like to be able to collect more data, install systems on the rest of the fleet, and then potentially look at funding for a shoreside observer, a dedicated shoreside observer, so we can fully execute the census. So that'll be something to look forward to. I also met with them about the actual work that we're doing on the Trawl EM committee, and thus far Saltwater has taken on a great deal of that work, and I think we're going to shift around some of the activities from Saltwater over to the borough. It's a more appropriate role for us to be assisting with writing the exempt fishing permit, to be working on the grant application, things like that. So I will be sort of taking that on with Ernie going forward. So kelp, mariculture, I was out in Sandpoint 2 weeks ago, weekend before last. We had a really successful trip. I won't go into the weeds too much, but we did get to go out on the decision and do some benthic dive surveys. I was able to get a much better idea of what kind of species we have available and kind of where they're at in their life cycle for spring, which is pretty important. I will be compiling sort of a species guidebook, which I hope to make public and obviously will make available to any interested stakeholders. we were able to finalize the MOU with Trident, and so Trident did come with us on the trip, and they were able to look at their own site, and we sort of talked about how we'd like to collaborate going forward on a limited basis. And we have also discussed the possibility of looking into a commissioner's permit to harvest a minimal amount of wild kelp. The permit application is pretty slow right now. So in the meantime, we'd like to be making steps forward as far as research and development by maybe harvesting some wild kelp that we anticipate cultivating, and then potentially selling that to Trident for them to, you know, look into R&D. So that's just something I just started looking into, and I'll have more information probably at the next meeting. You guys see some pictures on there. That's just for your own reference. That's just kind of like there's a picture of a variety of the species we have. Alan Starnes and myself underwater doing surveys. We also are going to start doing long-term monitoring of light attenuation and temperature in the site. So that was what that buoy was deployed for. So it's just some fun pictures. I just want to say thank you to Tina. She was an amazing host. We got to do a lot of fun stuff with kelp in our free time. And then also to Kylie and his crew and everybody who helped make that trip a success. So it was good. Also, some quick updates that I didn't put in my report. So SWAMC is also applying for a Department of Energy grant to look at some of the more technical research involved for kelp, and Eric O'Brien, who's with SWAMC, who's kind of fronting this effort, has asked a group of interested industry representatives to participate in a steering committee for this grant. He's asked me to participate, and with Ernie's blessing, I said, you know, if the grant goes through, I'd be happy to do that, to give them some feedback on what's most important for us on an industry level for research. Also, as a status of the state of mariculture in Alaska, the current permitting process is taking about 18 months, so that's kind of the average of how long it's taking. In 2017, there were 8 applications for kelp and also kelp and shellfish combined. In 2018, there were 10 apps, and as of right now, we are the only applicant west of Kodiak. There's that for you. For meetings, I held a sort of really informal community forum in Sandpoint while I was out there just to do a presentation on seaweed mariculture, a very intro to the industry, sort of where we're at with the state, what the borough's doing, and stuff like that. And I plan to do those types of meetings throughout the life of this project and in all of the communities. It was a small group, but I thought the conversation was really good. There was a ton of discussion, a lot of engagement, so I was really happy with how that turned out. last week during the council meeting, there was an industry trawl survey industry meeting. I guess there was no formal title for it, but the state of the Alaska Fisheries Science Center's budget is also looking bleak, and they will be decreasing funding for our trawl surveys, which we rely on for groundfish tax setting. And so there's definitely a lot of concern from the industry about some of this reduced funding for trawl surveys. So a group of industry representatives got together, Ernie and myself attended, to talk about alternative funding strategies and how we could be doing like creative surveys, maybe working with industry and fishermen to find a way around this. So there will be another meeting probably in 6 months to present some sort of plan or proposal for this that we will be bringing back to the stakeholders to talk about. But until then, it's just kind of an idea that's being floated around. I do have the Trawl EM committee meeting tomorrow. Ernie and I plan to attend the Wakefield Symposium. I will potentially be attending the council meetings in Sitka, I don't know yet, in June. And then also am planning trips to Accutane and False Pass to continue sighting in those communities. And then also I put together the Climate Change Corner, which is like a little brief newsletter on climate change. But climate change is happening so fast and news comes out so quickly, I'm not sure what's going to be the best way to deliver this kind of information. So I'll probably work with Laura and Ernie to figure that out. And if you have any questions, please let me know. Sorry I'm so long-winded today.
Okay. Thank you for your report. Questions for Charlotte?
I will tell you something about Charlotte. When she came to Sandpoint, she brought kelp. She brought kelp salsa. She brought pickled kelp. She brought all kinds of stuff, and it was very different. So that's all I can say.
Well, it made me go.
So
I'm not sure if that's a good thing. Okay.
Yeah, but when they were here, Tina and Charlotte started their own little pickling process, and so there's lots of pickled kelp in Sunfoot right now.
Letting the market.
And they taste really good.
I'm getting you some, Carol.
No, thank you.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And then we have AMO, Maintenance Director's Report.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor and Assembly members. My report's also in your packet. But just been organizing, getting the inspections up and getting ready to go here as the beginning of the next fiscal year so that we could get going on it when the children are not in school this year and better weather for people to come out and fly around during the summer months. So it'd be a good thing. I mean, couple nice days that we've been having around here, been out working in the yard, killing moss, planting flowers, doing the grooming before the summer season starts, which is only a couple months away. It's coming pretty quick this year. It seems like it's quicker and quicker every year. But replaced the stack up on the boiler here in the office. The brackets had rusted away and made the stack blow down, so I had to get a new stack and new stabilizers there. And just been doing odds and ends, working on my stuff with OSHA, putting out, helping with Mary and doing a OSHA request for the hazardous materials in the schools, getting that up because we have to do it every 3 years, have new things there. Bridge signings, you know, for our bridges in King Cove, making sure they're up to state standards and in False Pass. We got bridges in both places and working on these CIP projects, which is a capital improvement projects with the state for funding and things so we could try to keep up on the list of scoring the way they score it. Hopefully they find some money there to be able to fund and refund the schools on their projects. It'd be nice to be up and be able to get some of that money if they do release any. And then on that note, with the budget, my upcoming projects, I'll be looking at seeing how much I could do after the next budget comes out. You know, but we have an Actan school project that we put off for this next year because price got too high in the Sandpoint school. So we're looking at that and the Sandpoint paint project that got moved on from last year as well. So I'm still just working away, getting things taken care of, working with my OSHA compliancy checklists and everything that I need to have to make sure my facilities are up and compliant. And that's about all I have for this month.
Okay. Thank you, Emil. Questions for Emil? Okay. Good. Thank you for your reports, everyone. Assembly comments at this time.
Mayor, this is Carol. I just have one. I guess it's kind of directed to Paul and Ernie. Where's the 2016 pink disaster money? I heard it's in the government coffer, so somebody needs to get a push-in on that and get it out before they spend that, too. Just a comment.
Mr. Mayor, I'll respond if I just quickly. Last month, there was an article in the Cordova Times, it said, approval for Pink Sammer disaster funding expected soon. That link does no longer exist. Who knows where that funding is, and we're continuing to try to find it. You're right. It's up to the government. Who knows where that
funding is. It's in there someplace,
Paul may have more information.
Paul, you have more information, don't you?
Slightly more, and that's just at the in-state Pacific States meeting, who's going to just write the checks once the state figures out what they're doing. I believe it's in May sometime, so there may be some additional information available in May, but I've been asking around, too, and it's hard to get any information out of this administration. So no news, I guess, is best I can come up with.
So does the, when they cut the check, does it go to the governor of each of the state?
No, I believe the Pacific States, the governor approves it and just gives the money to Pacific States to administer, I believe. I think. That's the best I know.
Well, maybe it's stamped raw fish tax on it. Even.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor.
Ingrid. Ingrid, and then. Go ahead, Ingrid.
I'm changing topics. Are they on the same?
Oh.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to add something to Carol's question.
Sure.
So I it's not much, but I did get an email from a colleague of Ernie's and mine with a status report from Mark Hickey about fisheries disaster assistance. So I'll just read it, and I don't know what it's worth, but it says that we're still waiting the approval of 2016 Gulf of Alaska pink salmon disaster grant plan. The program manager of the fisheries, Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission submitted the application in November. Obviously, the application came to a halt during the government shutdown. We've been informed that it is currently under review at the Office of Management and Budget, and they've recently cleared a grant application for the West Coast Dungeness crab disaster and a number of small tribal fisheries disasters on the West Coast, and they view this as a sign that the Alaska grant application should move forward this month. So there it is.
Okay. Thank you, Charlotte. Ingrid.
Superintendent Seifert wanted to offer an official invitation to all of you to come join us for the interview with the three candidates that made it in through the weather and are going to be here for potluck tonight at 6 o'clock. And I believe for those people online, I believe in most of our sites that it'll be available at your schools online as well via VTC.
So they're going to do interviews?
Or is it community, I think it's the community interaction similar to what we did in previous superintendent cycle. So I think there's going to be the ability to ask questions. And it's also a community potluck, just interacting with them.
Okay, great. Paul?
Earlier, we were talking about ADAC. I wasn't quite clear if everybody answered the question is if somebody was maybe going to call Brad to see if anything in the legislation might affect us. I don't know if you or Ernie was maybe going to give a quick call tomorrow, for instance, as to see how that ADAC legislation, because there's always surprises, and I'm nervous about it as all. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think Ernie today got a hold of somebody, Stafford, on there. Ernie?
Yeah, no, I talked to Steve Miner, who works with the ADAC folks, but I can reach out to Brad and see what he knows. I'll do that.
Okay. All right. Okay, if there's no other assembly comments, public comment.
I have a comment, Mayor. This is Justine in Nelson McGill.
Yes, Justine.
Good afternoon. I just want to thank the assembly for passing the reservation resolution concerning my retirement and the gift. That was very generous of you. I've been honored to be on the assembly all these years. We have a strong region, strong communities, and strong leaders. And I wanted to tell you, Mr. Mayor, you've been doing an excellent job as Annie, and you've got a wonderful, wonderful staff. But I really would like to recognize Tina and Roxanne. They're like the backbone of this whole region. They're totally dedicated, and they always have wonderful humor. And again, I thank you, and it's been a privilege. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the comments. Yes, we were happy to provide you with that. And, you know, we miss you on the assembly. You've been here the longest, probably since we started, I think. So, but
yes,
you know, if you remain in Nelson Lagoon, you're not going to get rid of us though, because as time goes on here, I think there's a couple projects we're doing over there. We're going to come over and
Thank you.
I hope you do come over. And you can wallow around in the sand, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, I will do that. But, and I'm sure Tina and Roxanne appreciate your good wishes for them and the work that they've done, as we all do.
Yes.
So do we have any other
Thank you.
Public? You bet. If not, we are down to the next meeting date, which will be May 9th. And then just so everybody knows, because of the early opening of the June season, this year we're going to forego June. May is going to be our budget cycle, so basically we'll have an introduction on May 9th and then a final reading of the budget on the 23rd of May. And then the month of June, the staff can get rid of all of us.
Thank you. Oops, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Last month and the month before and the month before, and by the way, the month before and the month before, we've been talking about going to Falls Pass. And it appears like a window of opportunity, maybe that second meeting in May, and that would entail, according to our travel expert, which is Tina, that a charter like PC-12 come from Anchorage with staff, pick up a couple people in Sandpoint or King Cove, it holds 9 people, go to Falls Pass for a theoretically short meeting and check out the community and do whatever else, and that would be cost effective. I can't remember when the last time we went to someplace besides a telephone for a meeting. Somebody can refresh my memory, but I forgot, I guess. But I think this is some, you know, we can make the decision later. I just thought I'd mention it. So next meeting, I can say we talked about it this meeting. So thank you.
Yeah, we've been talking about that for a while, and I'm all for that. So what we could do is see if Tina could put something together that we could look at. She gave me a thumbs up on that, so we'll take a look at it. Ingrid.
I think I've been on record several times about us getting into the community, so I would certainly be an advocate, especially the second meeting, because school is over. But I also would support us supporting our local vendors in the region, and I know that we have some local fly carriers out here, and Iliamna's just up the street, and, you know, whatever we can add to the economy, I would prefer if we can somehow do that.
How about if we leave it up to Tina to find the most cost-effective way? And with our, you know, with a bunch of things going on, and not only out here but in Juneau, I think we need to look at whatever is most cost-effective. And I really have, since I've been here, I've wanted the borough to travel more in the region, but a lot of times logistics is so hard, and it's not like it was 20 years. It is really expensive to move people around in this borough. But we'll do the best we can. We'll bring something for you to look at, maybe with a couple different price ranges on it that you can take a look at that next meeting. How's that?
Mary, too, might be running.
Are you trying to keep this going until 5?
I think it's easier with the pack on.
Into Bay and
not
from there, too, from the Anchorage delegation.
Okay. So with that, do we have any other comments out in the Anchorage or any other site?
Move to adjourn.
You got a week, though.
That's a comment.
So Paul can't talk anymore, so he wants to adjourn. Okay. We are done. We are adjourned. See everybody on the 9th of May. Thank you.